hour from the station that leaves no listener behind. NBC News Radio, AM 1050, KCAA.
This is the KCAA Community Calendar. St. Mary Foundation presents its third annual Men Who Cook event on Saturday, April 12th at the Hilton Garden Inn Conference Center, 12603 Mariposa Road in Victorville. Proceeds from this event will benefit the St. Joseph's Health St. Mary Foundation, supporting community health and wellness programs that benefit all high desert area residents and acquiring new state-of-the-art technology for patient care. That's the third annual Men Who Cook event, Saturday, April 12th, at the Hilton Garden Inn Conference Center, 12603 Mariposa Road in Victorville. For more information, please contact Jackie Morgan at 760-946-8167. And that's your KCAA Community Calendar.
Welcome to Isla Earth. It's another conservation success. Well, maybe not. The greenback cutthroat trout was declared extinct in 1937, but a few populations were found in Colorado two decades later. And for years, wildlife specialists bred the endangered fish and restocked streams. So, it's ready to be taken off the endangered list. Not so fast. Turns out, they'd been breeding the wrong fish. How could this happen? Well, the greenback cutthroat trout looks a lot like its not-at-all-endangered cousin, the Colorado River cutthroat trout. In fact, it took a genetic analysis to show that the fish being brought back were the wrong ones. The greenback cutthroat used to thrive in streams and rivers of the eastern Colorado Rockies, but mining, pollution, and competition from other species made its population plummet. So, what now? Well, the greenback cutthroat trout will remain an endangered species for a while longer, but there is good news. At least four populations bred were, in fact, genuine greenback cutthroats. And now, armed with better genetic information, wildlife managers can keep trying to bring them back to sustainable levels. It just might take another 20 years. Learn more at islaearth.org. Isla Earth is produced by the Catalina Island Conservancy through its Fund for a Sustainable Planet, because Earth is an island.
Like to spend a few days in another world? Then write this down. Golden Bear Cottages, Big Bear Lake. Now, listen, this is not some corporate-owned operation. It's family-owned and operated by some real nice people. Unique? Oh, you bet. Golden Bear Cottages features 28 one-of-a-kind cabins on a 5-acre historic site. Great for families, couples, and groups. And cabins are available with 1 to 7 bedrooms. Golden Bear Cottages is just a stone's throw from Big Bear Lake and super close to 3 great ski areas. Now, I could go on all day about Golden Bear Cottages in Big Bear, but to see everything, just go to goldenbear.net. Again, goldenbear.net. Golden Bear Cottages in Big Bear. Clean, comfortable, and affordable. Check them out. goldenbear.net.
Hi, this is Bob with Real Estate Talk with Bob and Randy. Tune in every Thursday afternoon from 3 until 4 at KCAA Radio 1050, and we will be there to answer your real estate questions, the latest real estate news, and to talk to the leaders of the real estate industry. Our Real Estate Talk, you can find out how to stop your foreclosure, first-time homebuyer information, loan modifications, different kinds of loans you can buy with, short sale strategies, and real estate investing and more. So don't forget, tune in every Thursday afternoon at 3 for Real Estate Talk with Bob and Randy. You'll be glad you did.
Thank you, Inland Empire, for listening to KCAA Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We're heading through March. Constitution Radio with Douglas V. Gibbs right here on KCAA AM 1050. I'd add for that real estate show with Bob and Randy. They used to come on right after me. Here on Saturday. Now they've got a couple days during the week, and it's a good show. Well, very informative. Welcome to the show, DouglasVGibbs.com, PoliticalPistachio.com. You can email me at ConstitutionSpeaker@Yahoo.com. Call in number 888-909-1050, 888-909-1050. And we talk about the Constitution, politics, and the world events. And I wanted to start today's show about some world events. I gave a friend of mine a call. So I've got him on the air, but real quick before I bring him on. Remember, everybody, 25 myths of the Constitution, 25 myths of the United States Constitution. My book is out there. It's not just for all you to hear, but also my guests, because I hadn't had a chance to tell them about my book. So, Arcadi, 25 myths of the United States Constitution. It's at Amazon for like $12 or and then I'll get you a signed copy if we can. We'll do something. But anyway, I call my friend Arkady Fokdotovich, because he was born and raised in an area that's really a big part of the news right now. And if ever we needed a perspective from that mindset, this is the person, this is the time. Arkady, welcome back to Constitution Radio. It's been a while, my friend. I'm glad to hear your voice.
Yes, it was. Thank you very much for having me.
You know, the moment this stuff was going on in Ukraine, you came to mind, and I've got a schedule that is so busy, you know, it makes bees, you know, nervous. But I tell you what, and I'm sitting here talking to these guys, I'm like, oh, man, let's call Arkady, perfect guy to have on the show. All right, do a real quick background. You're originally from Ukraine. You schooled at the University of Kiev.
Yes.
Came here to the United States. What year?
I came in 79, but I left in 78, and I was actually, it took me a while to get to the United States, going through everything that I had to go through, medical examination, application forms. Basically, United States government at that time knew everything about me before I even entered the country.
Oh, wow.
So then I came here, just found a job on the third day, or a second, actually the second day, pumped the gas at the gas station for $2.15 an hour, and then I just started working in the engineering field and never looked back, and here I am.
Yeah, well, you know, and when you tell your story, it cracks me up, because you talk about your first job being pumping gas for like $2.15 an hour, and you thought you were rich, because compared to what you were doing in Ukraine as an engineer for the government, you were rich here.
Yeah, I was incredibly well-to-do guy at $2.15 an hour, because I saved my money, bought my first car, and what a wonderful country we have.
Now you are you still in touch with the Ukraine?
Yes, I do, because I have a dear friend who, my classmate in the university, and sometimes we communicate via Skype. I mean, she tells me some latest and greatest, but the majority of the time we actually talking about stuff that I'm interested in, like, for instance, how's your food supply? Do you guys have any interruption of water, electricity? And he told me, no, that most of the upheaval in Kyiv was happening in the middle of town, in basically downtown where I used to live, not very far from the Independence Square. And so that's where the barricades, he is living on another, on the opposite bank of the river, and as you know, Kyiv is a very, very beautiful town, city, big city, 4 million people, and it's has a river that flows through the city. It's called Dnieper, and it's a beautiful piece of land, very rich agricultural land, some huge industrial city. They build ships and airplanes. Ships are built in Mykolaiv. That's the, you know, the town. Antonov factory that they build cargo planes. Just a big industrial city. Very old city, much older than Moscow. Kyiv used to be the capital of Kyiv Rus. That's where Russia was appeared. Because a lot of counties that were separate entities, they united and they formed Russia. Kyiv was the first capital of Russia. Then they moved it to Moscow much later time.
Didn't know that.
Moscow is a younger city, pretty much reminds me of Los Angeles. They show Kremlin and they show some beautiful churches, but actually it's a 12 million people metropolis, and it's just a busy town. I spent 2 years in Moscow, and I did some projects in Moscow. But Kyiv, it's much richer in its culture and heritage. It was the trade routes, and basically that's the rough history of Ukraine. Ukraine was under the protectorate because the ruler of Ukraine at the time, Bogdan Khmelnytsky, as a result of the war between Poles and Ukrainians, he was losing, and he decided to get protection from Russia. And the Catherine the Great said, "Oh, Bogdan, come on over. I will give you a bear hug," and she did. So
give you a bear hug? Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Now,
don't hire a wolf to protect you from a dog.
Turn on his mic.
Yes.
There we go. Say it again, Alex.
I say the Sandinistas have an expression that you don't hire wolves to protect you from dogs.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, what's your immediate thought about what's going on right now in the Crimea and Ukraine? And
well, in a nutshell, the Yanukovych, who was the president that was ousted, was elected under some very questionable circumstances. A lot of people say, oh, he was a legitimate president. But who is Yanukovych? Let me go to his background. Yanukovych was a very small-time criminal who was imprisoned when he was 17 and spent 3 years in jail for stealing hats. Hmm. And the way he was stealing hats, he would go to public restrooms and he would see the stall where the man was sitting down with his very expensive fur hats, and he would take it out and run. That's what Yanukovych is all about. He's a thief. And no morals, no anything good about the guy. But he was elected because the elite of Ukraine thought that he is much better than Yulia Tymoshenko, who was his Ukraine prime minister. So to avoid competition from Tymoshenko, he jailed her and let her out he didn't let her out. She was released when upheaval started. So how did it start? Ukraine is now on its back because they have no money, and the life in Ukraine is not much better than life in Russia, but Russians are a little bit better financially.
Right.
Even though the ruble is going through a free fall right now, and the economy of Russia is not doing well at all.
All right. Now, I've got a little bit less than 5 minutes because I do have a guest I want to get to, too. So let's. I want to do something here real quick. There's a gentleman who spends a lot of time on the show with me. He's a part of the show. His name is Alex, and Alex is with me here. And he has an interesting angle that goes kind of further back. And I want him to explain his angle, and then I want to get your reaction to what he says.
Sure.
And then we'll move on to our guest. So, Alex, what's your angle on this you were talking to me earlier about?
Yeah, well, I've been talking for months here on this station about the Ukraine, coincidentally. And what I'm talking about is that, especially under Stalin, but starting, I think it was in 1793 or something like that, the Russians have dealt with the Ukrainian nationalists by deporting them or murdering them. Now, in 1932, 1933, Stalin decided, right, well, before that, in 29, he decided that the Ukrainian people were just too resistant, especially the Tatars. So he took millions of them and deported them into Siberia. And what he would do is he'd stop the train and empty one car. And then he'd stop. This is in the middle of the wilderness. He'd just let these people out in the wilderness, and they would die of starvation and freezing to death. In the meantime, he'd then bring in Russian population and just let them take over the houses of the people that disappeared. Now, that got to be kind of tricky. So what he did was he cut off the food supply. He took the wheat that the farmers in Ukraine raised, which was the breadbasket of Europe, and he sold it for machinery, for industrial machinery. But he wouldn't let the people in the Ukraine eat it. And as a consequence, I think the total was 6 or 7 million people starved to death.
It was a little more than that.
1932, 1933, they just shut off. They went and got the seed corn. They not only took the corn, but they took the stuff you're going to plant next year. If a woman went out in the field and tried to glean, she tried to salvage some of this forage for some of this loose grain on the ground. There was actually a law in place that the KGB could just club her to death because it was illegal to feed yourself.
Very true. What you're saying is true. We call it Golodomor, which is starvation of people because they wanted to bring them into collective farms, and they didn't like independent farmers. That was done through rule of Stalin, and that's what you're saying is absolutely true. There were a resistance movement like Bandera movement, because Bandera was one of the Ukrainian nationalists that fought against the Bolshevism. But as far as Ukrainian situation today, I will be trying to be very brief because what happened when the Yanukovych, the president of the Ukraine, told people that he's going to sign the contract with European Union just recently, then Putin and offered something Yanukovych that he couldn't refuse, and he turned himself 180 degrees and decided to start going into contract, a trade contract with Russia, and abandon the European Union. People didn't like it, and there was a protest, approximately 20 or 30,000 people. And during the night, when the protesters started to go home and they were picking up their banners and stuff, and there were about 500 people left, the Berkut, who is the Spetsnaz of Ukraine, Berkut is the name of the hawk, they were unleashed on those 500 unarmed civilians who were peacefully disassembling, and they were going home. And they clubbed them. People sustained an incredible injury. All 500 of them were beaten up by armed, heavily armed punks in uniform. That created an upheaval that basically brought down Yanukovych. Almost a million people, and Kyiv is about 3.5 to 4 million people. Just imagine that 25% went on the street. And that's how the Maidan, as you see on TV, was appearing. However, Putin, Yanukovych was running away, and he abandoned his country because of who he is. And the reason he abandoned his country, because he didn't have any protection. And no matter what the talking heads on TV saying that sanctions don't work, the reason he left, because Switzerland closed his account, arrested his money, and he didn't have any money to pay to his banks to protect him. And he left his post because he's a coward. And that's what happens. Now, Moscow, through the disinformation techniques that they are very good at, started to call the people on the Maidan area, they called them fascists, Nazis, Jew sympathizers, all kinds of stuff. Several groups started appearing, poisoning the atmosphere. The leaders of opposition, there are three of them, Yatsenyuk, who became a prime minister, Klitschko, and Tagnibok, they started, because of that, they started to have arguments between themselves. Then the Yulia Tymoshenko, who was imprisoned by Yanukovych, was released. And now she probably will have some kind of a way with Putin, because they go back, and the opinion in Ukraine that Mrs. Tymoshenko can talk to Putin, and Putin can talk to her. And they have some kind of trust between them. However, Ukraine has this peninsula called Crimea, Krim. Peninsula of Krim was given to Ukraine in 1954. and it has some kind of autonomous position, which during Soviet Union was nil, but it's used to be Russian territory. The Russians fought for it and took it from Ottoman Turkish Empire. And so now you have about 65% of Russians who live there.
You really then have the Muslims, the Russians, and the Ukrainians all taking claim to this one peninsula.
That's right. Crimea Tatars, that you guessed now, absolutely correctly pointed out that Crimea Tatars were exiled and shipped to Siberia in the newly formed republic called Tatarstan. More than half of them perished and never survived. So Tatars don't like communists. They don't really care for communists. There's about one, I would say about 400,000 or 500,000 Tatars living in the area.
The unfortunate thing, Arkady, is I'm out of time here. On this segment. Man, I tell you what, you and I, listeners, when Arkady and I get on the phone, I better make sure, and he better make sure we don't have much to do, because it will be a long conversation. He and I could talk for hours. And Arkady, thank you for, spur of the moment just coming on, because the information that you have in your head about that, of course, is because you live there, but it's absolutely incredible. Got to get you back on sometime again in the future. And I'll give you a call later. We'll chat
anytime
if you got time. All right. Talk to you later. That said, we're getting ready to go to break, and when we come back, G.R. Mobley, who has been patient, he's like, hey, where'd 20 minutes of my part of the show go? But no, he's been patient, and I appreciate it. This was important stuff. It needed to be talked about. But when we come back, G.R. Mobley is with us. We the people. Whose constitution is it anyway? We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
K-C-A-A.
What's your constitutional IQ? Your quest to learn the Constitution can be fun for the whole family. Learn about the Constitution as you play the Constitution Quest board game. Learn more at ConstitutionQuest.com.
AM Radio just got better. You're listening to Constitution Speaker Radio with Douglas V. Gibbs on KCAA Radio, AM 1050.
Ready to begin that project. FST Sand and Gravel is family-owned and managed and has been serving Southern California since 1964. We provide a variety of aggregate and sand materials direct from the manufacturer. Prices and quantities are available for the large contractor all the way down to the private homeowner. No job is too big or too small. So visit us at fstsand.com. That's fstsand.com.
For more local radio every day, listen to KCAA.
Right. And welcome back, Constitution Radio. Douglas B. Gibbs, KCAA, AM 1050. And we were just talked to earlier this week. Liberty Tree Media Group is going to start rebroadcasting our shows. This is a podcast network. And they have decided they want to rebroadcast these shows. This is a podcast network with the aim of eventually syndicating and possibly moving into satellite radio. And the gentleman I talked to said that my name came up without hesitation when they were forming this network, and they definitely wanted me to be a part of it. I will advise you as soon as we become a part of it and tell you how to get to their page and all that down the road. Real quick, also. 25 Myths of the Constitution. 25 Myths of the United States Constitution. Buy it, love it, read it, and tell everybody else about it. Okay, we have G.R. Mobley with us in the studio, waiting patiently. He lost like half of his time, but he's excited to be with us. I'll add a day somewhere for him. But because having Arkady on and having Alex say what he had to say about it, I thought was very important, especially with what the stories are going on right now in that part of the world. It was something we had to address, we had to talk about, and having Arkady on, and we really need to have him on for an entire show, have him come back for an entire show. He is absolutely incredible. I just love the man, and I've been friends with him now for a few years, and how awesome is it that I've got this guy who's born and raised in the Ukraine, and he's very active where he lives and all that, and got him in my cell phone. Hey, man, come on the show. Okay, no problem. That's awesome. I just, it's amazing the people you meet when you do stuff like this. But anyway, all right, Mr. Mobley, we want to get more into the strategy, the how to bring about convention, exactly what the convention is, all that. We kind of got off track a little bit last time, and I really want us to dig deep into turning this country around and what it's going to take. But let me say this, that this is a representative republic, but those people who are involved, they have to participate. If you're not participating, well, then what we were talking about earlier, what's going on in Russia and what has gone on in Russia and Ukraine, that's us someday in the future.
Hopefully not. I believe there's a lot of scholars that don't look at the direction that America's going in our history and the things that have kind of created our character and our culture here really won't lead us down that path. I mean, the Soviet Union or Russia historically has always been a very despotic natured culture for centuries and centuries and centuries. I believe it was the 1860s that 22 million serfs and slaves were emancipated. However, there was no process to get them into the labor forces and a part of society mm-hmm. in Russia during that time frame.
Well, liberty is in our soul. Liberty is in our bloodstream. It's who we are. And, you know, I mean, you go all the way back to the first Americans in the frontier and the hard work it took just to survive. And that really instilled in the American spirit, you know, the self-reliance, the personal responsibility, hard work, all that. It was really ingrained into us because of the struggles of those early colonists. So it's really a part of our culture, who we are.
Right. And it actually goes back to the Magna Carta, to Glorious Revolution, to our revolution,
mm-hmm, sure.
Where our culture was very much centered around representation. We fought a war over taxation without representation, and we're now, I believe, at a brink of a war. As a matter of fact, myself and Alex have used the same phrase. We're literally at a point where we have representation without taxation.
Right.
And so we're definitely at the precipice of either a capitulation or somehow we're going to have to swallow a pill of austerity. But I don't believe that it necessarily has to be there's two types of austerity.
Yeah, well, like me, you're an optimist. And it's like I was saying on ADR earlier, American Daily Review with Jasmius earlier. I believe that there is it's sort of like going down that Niagara River. You know, you got that sign that says the point of no return. I don't think we've passed that sign yet. However, like I told Jasmius, we are so close to that sign that I can read the fine print even without binoculars or without my glasses. Now it's so clear. You know, that fine print says made in China. I can read that clearly. We're so close, but we have not passed that sign.
But I believe there's enough movement towards, I would say, the right lane for exiting purposes. I think there's been enough marketing on despotic leadership within the nation to where things like the IRS and NSA and those types of things are really motivating people to look at what are our alternatives. And as you and I know, going down the status quo of just trying to elect people that are well positioned in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party and so forth is the status quo. It's not going to solve our problem.
All right. So the average listener now is listening and saying, okay, you guys are optimists. You think it'd be turned around. You talk about this. You say this. You say that. But how? How?
Well, the fast track is to get our local representatives, or your local sheriff, your city council, your mayors, anybody that is an elected official that actually swears to the oath of protecting and defending the Constitution. In other words, they raise their right arm to the square and they say that they will defend and protect the Constitution.
And they realize what they were really saying.
And there's lots of very good people in these positions. And I think that once they've been brought to the attention that they actually have a responsibility, that they can start petitioning the state legislatures, that I believe you'd start seeing a flood of petitions coming in from representatives and from citizens. Most of the United States will start swinging towards, let's have this conversation. Let's bring the convention together.
Hey, you say, let's have this conversation. Let's have this convention. Okay, so in other words, a bunch of people getting together and talking. How do you do it? What format is it in?
Well, so as I've included in the second book, We the People, the strategy to convene a convention for republic review, the process is not trying to amend the Constitution. The process is not trying to change the Constitution.
Okay, so this is not an Article 5 convention then. It's like a cousin of the Article 5 convention maybe, but it's not necessarily an Article 5
Correct.
Convention.
Correct. I use the term Article 5 convention in trying to follow the same spirit of getting two-thirds of the states of the Union to coalesce, to basically to prove that we've got a majority of right. the states or the Union vested in saying we need to make a change, and then let them actually start performing a republic review and utilizing the Constitution. Because bottom line, as the convention coalesces and they all agree or acquiesce that there's been a usurpation or overreach of powers and so forth by the general government for over a century, that they can start reviewing the roles and responsibilities and powers that have been taken that have not been enumerated or amended to the Constitution. And these states within this convention can start saying, basically going back to the general government saying, because you did not follow the Article 5 process, we're going to assemble and provide a review of what you've taken upon yourself by bypassing this process. And if we can come to an accord to where we believe you need to amend the Constitution, let's say for the Department of Transportation, that the federal government or the general government needs to amend the Constitution for that, for them to have that constitutional right, responsibility, role, and power, then this constitutional convention will then go back to the general government and say,
right.
amend
and,
the Constitution.
If three-quarters of the states can't agree that that department is constitutional, then
– Well, they have to agree upon what is proposed in the amendment. Right? I mean,
right,
so
yeah,
we
but here's my case – or here's my point here. Okay, so you've got, let's say, the Department of Education, and it's the topic.
Right.
And you've got delegates from every state in this convention who have been – who are
you are very optimistic if you think California is going to be there, or maybe New York, or maybe Hawaii.
Well, but let's just say, okay, well, we're talking hypothetically.
They have skin in the game, and they should be there.
Right, but now, all right, well, even if they're not there, but three-quarters of 50
correct
states say, well, that's not constitutional. It shouldn't even exist.
Correct.
Well, we don't need an amendment.
Well, technically,
three-quarters of states just said I mean, well, really, you only need a quarter of them, actually. I keep saying three-quarters. You
right.
only need a quarter of them
correct.
To say that because you need three-quarters to approve.
Correct.
So a quarter of the states say, hey, this isn't constitutional. Then technically that department should have ceased to exist right there because it doesn't have the permission of the states.
So what you would need is 13 states to adamantly say this role, responsibility, or power should not be in the hands of the general government. We don't see any reason why we would be better served by putting this into a centralized power instead of allowing the states or the union itself to come up with their own ways of managing infrastructure or, let's say, energy or, let's say, education. Or all of the other usurpations that the general
right.
government has applied.
Okay.
And so it only takes 13 states, again, to position themselves. Yeah,
okay,
and say,
so
no
now you got these states, and let's say they all are in agreement. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's cool, okay. And then the federal government says, screw you guys.
Well, then the body of this union, or I should say in this convention, basically all coalesces and acquiesces on the fact that we are the funding body of the general government. And so if they have to set up, as has been done already, I believe in the state of Idaho and maybe Oklahoma, there's two states that have set up escrows to where they do not provide funding for federal programs that are not constitutional. They did that very specifically.
Right. Let me play devil's advocate, and I'm going to do this from the mindset of the federal government and those that are in that, okay?
Sure, sure.
Okay, so this convention is illegal. That money belongs to the government, and we are going to use the federal court system to make sure all of you states are fully. You should be fully prepared to meet your maker, so to speak. You're in big trouble now. Federal court's involved. We're taking you down, states. This is a union, and of course they think a union means that the federal government controls the states. And if you're going to step out of line, we're going to put you back in the line.
So
how many of the states go, oh, no.
I really don't believe that the federal government will be able to use that type of a heavy hand. Somebody asked me the other day, do you think that the federal government would actually, you know, attack a state for stepping out of line or a few states that rejected
– use a military or a civilian force?
in 1956, for a good reason, Eisenhower did it, and it happened.
Yes, and we've shifted our paradigm somewhat. I do not believe with the YouTube and just the way things can go viral, when one person gets beat up in a, whether it's a Board of Education presentation or whether it is a traffic cop pulling somebody over and a little stick action happens, it just goes viral, and it never bodes well for the person that uses the heavy hand.
Are you telling us that the fact that everybody's walking around with a smartphone with a camera in it is going to keep the federal government in line?
I think that it's true to everybody's advantage to be able to document everything, and that's what the framers did. They documented the fact that they did hold the powers at the state level to be able to conduct oversight and review. That's exactly why the Kentucky and the Virginia resolutions were written, because as states, they are obligated to protect their citizens from an unconstitutional government.
You hear that, people? Your smartphone's good for more than cat videos and arguing with people you've never met.
We might hear a story about that.
Yeah. All right. So so let's say the state – see, here's my fear, because I believe – pretty much the same way you do. But here's my fear. It's like I've talked about nullification, for example. If states – let's say – 28 states nullified a federal law.
Well,
federal,
you only need 13. We've already agreed.
Yeah, I know, but and I'm just talking hypothetically, and I'm not even talking with convention. I'm just talking that the legislatures of 27 states decide we're going to file articles of nullification. We refuse to implement this unconstitutional law, whatever it may be someday in the future. Let's say it's a sedition act, and that, which is very possible. It's happened twice before. And so 27 states says, that's it, we're nullifying it, and that's more than half the states. What's the federal government going to dare do? And the federal government uses the courts, it uses the military, or at least they threaten it. My fear is that those 27 states, or at least most of them, would fold like a bunch of chairs because they believe, because they haven't been properly educated, that the federal government has this kind of power.
I understand that. It's going to take a while. It took Moses 40 years to change the culture of Israel wandering through the wilderness, and it'll take a while to change the culture here in America.
Yeah, the problem is our wilderness has got a few more obstacles and bombs and traps and everything else.
And we don't have 40 years to do this. I've had this conversation.
Got about 40 months.
I've had this conversation with a lot of constitutional scholars. And if you really look at where we are financially, if you look at where we are with our foreign affairs and all the different threats, internal and external, to this nation, we have just a matter of a few years until somebody comes along and for political purposes expeditiously discards the Constitution or suspends it for emergency power use or what have you. Habeas corpus out the window.
I'm expecting the courts to declare the Constitution unconstitutional. That's what I'm actually expecting.
Well, they vacillate. Sometimes they really take a good, strong position towards supporting the Constitution, and sometimes they take positions that people have no rights or inalienable rights or something that is endowed by our government, and which is contrary to what we've been taught.
By the way, we're going to add a day because Mr. Mobley is supposed to come back a few times on the show. I'm going to add one more day because you did lose quite a bit of time today, but it was important. I'm glad we did, but I want to have you back one more day later if we can.
I understand. There's going to be lots of dynamic issues, as a matter of fact, as we start moving more towards greater debt, as we start moving more towards people having to deal with austere times of losing their health insurance, the cost of food's going up, it's getting harder and harder. As a matter of fact, if you look at the catalysts that have caused the French Revolution, a lot of the revolutions within China, Russia, and so forth, the catalyst has always been a loss of food. The Arab Spring just recently, as food costs go up and the availability and you can't feed yourself, instantly you see anarchy and revolution start occurring.
Joe, is Jasmius with us? Bring Jasmius up. Go ahead and bring him up. Because you may know why I'm bringing Jasmius up. I'm bringing him up for real quick right now before we go to break for a specific reason. Him and Mr. Mobley have something in common. Jasmius, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. You see, it's a shame that you're not in this studio with us. Because Mr. Mobley's wearing this shirt that I want to light a match and burn. It says Super Bowl Champions, and it's got this logo in there with some freaky-looking hawk thing on it.
And I thought you would just love it. I mean, I almost tipped to take a picture of this logo, the shirt, just to send it to you.
I probably have that shirt myself, as a matter of fact.
It's the Antigua.
Yeah, my brother from a different mother.
There you go. Yeah, I'm surrounded by Seahawks fans. Don't become a Seattle fan, Alex, please.
I'm not a fan of any of these clowns. They're all sweaty and hairy, and oh, I do not care. Bring on the cheerleaders, I say.
Yeah. One time I was at a Raider game, and we were when they were in L.A., and we were fourth row back, and my friend was complaining he couldn't see the game because the cheerleaders were in the way.
What's the weather like up there?
It must have been a really lousy game, then.
Yeah. Jasmine, what's the weather like up there? I'm heading up there this next week.
Gray.
Rainy, maybe.
Oh, in other words, typical maybe. Seattle weather.
Good,
yeah.
Good. I miss it.
Maybe.
I miss
always.
It.
Yeah. All right. Now, before we go to break, I gotta say this real quick. May the Seattle Seahawks never win another Super Bowl. All right, go to break.
K-C-A-A.
Ready to begin that project. FST Sand and Gravel is family-owned and managed and has been serving Southern California since 1964. We provide a variety of aggregate and sand materials direct from the manufacturer. Prices and quantities are available for the large contractor, all the way down to the private homeowner. No job is too big or too small. So visit us at fstsand.com. That's fstsand.com.
Hey, do you know about the USA? Do you know about the government? Can you tell me about the Constitution? Hey, learn about the USA.
The Constitution is the instruction booklet for taking back the country. Douglas V. Gibbs on KCAA 1050 AM.
In 1787, I'm told, our founding fathers did agree to write a list of principles for keeping people free. The USA was just starting out, a whole brand new country. And so our people spelled it out, the things that we should be.
The Murrieta Temecula Republican Assembly is the largest chapter of the California Republican Assembly. The MTRA meets the first Friday of every month at 6 p.m. at the Temecula City Hall Conference Center, 41,000 Main Street, Temecula, California. Learn more at mt-ra.com. We are the conscience of the Republican Party.
Miss something today, yesterday, last week? Check out our podcasts at www.kcaaradio.com. AM 1050 KCAA. We leave no listener behind.
And welcome back, Constitution Radio, Douglas V. Gibbs. Right here on KCAA AM 1050. Before we talk about the book of the week and the Constitution Quest question of the week, I also want to bring up to everybody your property rights, Agenda 21, sustainable development, all that garbage. There's going to be an event in Norco on Monday, and I'm one of the two speakers, and I encourage all of you to attend Monday, March 10th. At the water wheel, is that what I told you? I keep saying wagon wheel. It's the water wheel. Water Wheel Saloon and Deli at 980 6th Street in Norco. 6:30 in the evening, reception. The meeting begins at 7. The first speaker is, well, yours truly. And, of course, I'm going to tackle the constitutional end of property rights and just compensation and eminent domain and all that jazz. Second speaker it's going to come up after me. His name is Dan Titus, and his presentation is titled Regionalism, Sustainable Development, and Your Property Rights. So I'm going to do the constitutional end, and he's going to do what's going on now end of the thing, and I think it'll be a great meeting. We're already looking at probably about 50 people. Looks like they're already planning to show up. This place can accommodate, you know, three times that, so be there. Don't be afraid of running out of room. It's a free event. It's a free event. They're going to have, I think, like appetizers or something like that available and drinks. And if you want more information about this event, you can call Joe Panzarello, he's at 818 See, 818-281-7244 or Mort Stevens at 951-733-8366. They are members and leaders, really, in the local John Birch Society who's putting on this event. And great guys, good group. I only disagree with them on convention. Interestingly enough, isn't that kind of interesting? Definitely an event I want you all to attend. Okay, Book of the Week. A Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin by Masha Gessen. Now, I've read this book. I don't have it on me, so I had to look it up. And it's pretty good. Now, you have to understand, the writer's not necessarily a conservative, but she is, let me read it so that you understand. It talks about her in here somewhere. Oh, no, I don't know where. But anyway, she was like a course. Oh, here we go. She was like a correspondent or something. I can't remember all the details about her history. But, I mean, she's not necessarily a conservative per se. But what it says on the website is, in 1999, the family surrounding Boris Yeltsin went looking for a successor to the ailing and increasingly unpopular president, Vladimir Putin, with very little governmental or administrative experience. He'd been deputy mayor of St. Petersburg and briefly director of the secret police. Nevertheless, seemed the perfect choice, a faceless creature whom Yeltsin and his cronies could mold into their own image. Russia and an infatuated West were determined to see in him the progressive leader of their dreams, even as Putin, with ruthless efficiency, dismantled the country's media, wrested control and wealth from the business class, and destroyed the fragile mechanisms of democracy. So that's the book. Once again, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin, by Masha Gessen, G-E-S-S-E-N. It's a great book. Like I said, she's not necessarily conservative, so there's going to be some parts you'll scratch your head a little bit. But for the most part, it's a really good book. It's very informative, and you get what's going on. All right. Constitution Quest Question of the Week, brought to you by Constitution Quest Game, ConstitutionQuest.com. Play the game and learn the Constitution. Have fun with the family. Learn the Constitution. And what's your constitutional IQ? Here's the question. Are you ready, Jasmine? Because I know you struggle with these so much. quit laughing so loud, Joe. It's almost deafening in here. New states can be admitted to the U.S. by, and actually this question, the answer, There's a addition I'll add to it, but it's essentially right. The new states can be admitted to the U.S. by A, Congress, B, three-quarters of state legislatures, or C, a majority of the people. Joe? Oh, come on. All right.
Three-quarters.
Who adds new states to the union? You say three-quarters of the state legislatures. B.
Sure.
Okay, Alex, A, Congress, B, three-quarters state legislatures, sure, C, a majority of the people.
Three-quarters.
Three-quarters of state legislatures. Garen, you know this, so I'm going to keep you out of it, because you know what I have to add to it, too. Jasmius?
Congress.
Congress. Yeah, your Skype just kind of made you sound all kinds of funny.
Congress.
A is right, Congress, but there's actually something to add. Congress and any states that are affected. So, in other words, let's say, we've been hearing stories about the new state of Jefferson. Have you heard about that?
That's the northern portion of California being divided into six separate states.
Well, that's one of the ideas, but also that one of the ideas is taking a part of California and a part of Oregon and forming this state, new state of Jefferson. Now, the answer to this is Congress, but, see, Congress wouldn't be the only ones that have to okay it. The state legislatures of California and Oregon would also have to, because they are a part of the forming of that state. It's their land and all that. So Congress is the right answer, but also the states influenced or affected also have to participate.
Right. Yeah, I knew there was more to it.
Well, because you're so brilliant, Joe. I mean, Joe knows everything. Matter of fact, he knows what I'm getting ready to say. Hey, Jasmius, welcome back, buddy.
Hey, did you know that the Pentagon spent $300,000 studying Vladimir Putin's body language?
And did they study Obama's too?
I didn't think it would take $300,000 to study one raised finger. So talk about $30,000 for a toilet seat. I mean,
has anybody else noticed the way Obama runs? He runs like a girl.
throws like a girl. Yeah. Well, my
oh,
favorite
yeah.
is.
Yeah. In fact, Matthew Continetti at National Review today has an article in which he calls Barack Obama America's first woman president.
Ah.
No joke.
Someone well, liked that one.
my favorite still is the email, which has the image of Putin on horseback, looking manly without the shirt, and then this shows an image of Obama on his bicycle with a sissy seat.
I saw the version I saw had Obama hanging some drapes.
That's what he does, yeah, in his off time. Well, that's usually what he's doing when he's in the Oval Office. You don't think he goes in the Oval Office for anything else, do you?
Well, put his feet up on old Resolute.
It's really important that they study that body language. Both Obama and Putin hoist their own petard quite a bit.
Hoist.
It's always been my...
And Putin's petard is much larger.
It's always been my contention, though, that George Bush is afraid of horses. You ever see a horse at his ranch? You ever see him or his kids on a horse? Never.
Never thought about it.
A guy's got a ranch. What do you do with ranches?
Well, it's a good thing he's not a Denver fan then.
He's a rabbit raiser.
Dig post holes. That's in clearing brush.
You dig post holes, so you can put the post in it, so you can put the post turtle up on top. Well, the post turtle's already on top in Washington. Never mind. You know what a post turtle is, right? It's a turtle on a post. You don't know how it got there, how it's going to get down, or why it's even there. Yeah, that's Obama.
Sounds like a mugwump.
All right, we got five big stories. First story, story number five, hit and run. I was hit by a vehicle yesterday, and they took off.
And they ran.
We talked about it at length on ADR, but let me give you the brief breakdown here. Job site, street work, road closed to outside traffic, which means only construction traffic and people are supposed to be on this road after I parked my truck and got ready to dump the material. That's right. Every day I get loaded and then take a dump with gravel and sand. And anyway.
Well, you get lots of roughage in your diet.
But anyway, and then the guy in the loader, it's a large piece of construction equipment, comes driving up. I step up on the ladder on the side of the machine to reach up to give him paperwork for him to sign. He signs paperwork. And behind him, there was a vehicle that wasn't supposed to be on that street parked. He had purposely put a short distance between him and my trailer so this vehicle couldn't get through because he wasn't even supposed to be there. He can wait, was the attitude. As I'm stepping down off the ladder, the guy decided to go. He squeezed between that little space, which I didn't think he could fit through, and he hit me right here on the back. Went right here. I'm on radio. Right here.
Circle the
you
area.
All know where I mean.
Circle the area for him.
My right side rear torso. Right,
like a kidney punch.
Yeah, it was right above my hip and spun me around. My leg flung around, slammed into the vehicle. I've got an abrasion on my leg. Nearly knocked me completely to the ground, but because I'm such an athlete, I stayed on my feet. Stop laughing. if my wife heard that, you would have heard, ah! But anyway,
that sounded like a crow.
Yeah, that's about what I was going for. You've talked to Virginia. Well, you've heard her talk. Let's put it that way. I had to make that noise because the other things that she says I can't say on radio.
Yes.
But
the Disney language.
Yeah, the Disney language. Yeah. Ah, boy. I was a sailor, construction man, and a truck driver, and I still have cleaner language than that woman. Then he took off, and I will explain the rest of the story with a question. You'll not know what I mean. What kind of idiot does a hit and run in a society where everybody's got a camera in their phone? That's right. We have his license plate number and everything else. Okay. That says story number four. Story number four, reconstructing the Soviet Union. We did a lot of talk about this on today's show, and Jasmine's did a lot on ADR earlier, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it because we got other stuff to talk about real quick in 5 minutes. But I do want Jasmine's to give us the punchline because he had a great one earlier on the show. I can't even remember it, but I knew it was great. Go ahead, Jasmine's. You're on the spot. You don't have a punchline. Never mind.
Which I could
all right, story
what
number.
They are talking about guerrilla war in the Crimea.
I think Arkady really nailed it for us, and also what Alex was talking about earlier. Story number three: Lois Lerner continues to plead the fifth. Issa just like was hammering her, man.
Well, he had a whole list of just devastating questions, and he made her sound like a psychotic parrot with Tourette's. Just play the fifth, play the fifth, play the fifth, play the fifth. That's why he cut off the hearing. He adjourned it early because he essentially accomplished what he set out to do. He made her look like she had something a whole lot to hide.
And then you got Cummings.
You got in it.
Cummings coming at her and him. And finally, turn off his mic, and he doesn't stop. The mic's off. He's still going.
Oh, and now the Democrats are talking about filing an ethics complaint against Daryl Issa for turning off Cummings' mic.
Yeah, because Cummings is black and Issa's white, so it must have been racism. All right, story number two. Missing a Malaysian flight that's not really to talk about, but a flight has gone missing. Was it 239 or – no, it's a bigger number now, 247, is it, passengers? And they found an oil slick, but they still haven't found the air flight. I guess now there's some stories of some stolen passports of some individuals on the plane, and there's questions of whether or not there was terrorism involved.
It's got to be a bomb because the pilots weren't even able – they didn't have time to radio a distress signal.
That's a good point, Alex. Yeah. That's a very good point. Didn't think of that.
12-mile-long oil slick spotted between Malaysia and Vietnam. It's like 12 miles? That's a whole lot of jet fuel, which implies it is spread out over a very large area, which suggests an explosion.
All right. Mr.
Moe,
there's got
to be a lot of debris. There has to be a lot of debris.
They have to find it, then.
There's luggage that is basically contained pockets. That would just be floating all over the place.
So since they haven't found it, what does that tell you then, Mr. Moe?
It couldn't have been an explosion.
So straight down, straight in, nose in, underwater somewhere.
Yep.
Still in one piece.
Yep.
Oh, just like Captain America.
Wait a second. So we've got pilots that don't have time to respond. That's why he thought it was an explosion, but there's not enough debris, so it could have been an explosion. So how is it that the pilots couldn't respond?
Nose in, straight into the water has happened, but in the process, the co-pilot was yelling, Allah Akbar. If you remember, there was a co-pilot that grabbed the Arab airliner's controls.
Oh, you're talking about another flight. Okay.
Yeah, flew it into the ocean.
But yeah, okay,
there was
a lot
of turmoil going on before you hit the water.
There have been other cases, though, where flying over large bodies, over the ocean, where you really lose perception of your altitude. And if they had that kind of equipment failure and so forth, they could have literally flew right into that and only basically separated the wings, which is your fuel tanks and so forth, where you would have seen a lot of fuel, but you wouldn't have seen the luggage necessarily.
All right. Okay.
I got $2. I'm laying $2 on explosion.
Well, that could buy half of my Chinese dinner.
Such a level of sentimentality we have in Constitution Radio, isn't it?
All right. Finally, story number one, CPAC. And CPAC's interesting because all the speakers have been loved except for Chris Christie. I mean, he got ovations and stuff, but the conservatives are going, are you kidding me? He was even invited?
Oh, yeah. I observed that on Political Pistachio the other day. The only thing I can figure is that he somehow managed to slide in a side exit door when nobody was looking.
Was that side exit door on the left side of the stage?
Probably. I'm amazed he fit. Now, I had the same observation about Mike Huckabee, except that I understand he lost a lot of weight. So he could probably do it. Maybe he dragged Christie through like Mr. Incredible going into that launch pod or whatever
he had to butter his hips first.
He had to butter his hips. Yeah. Well, you know, Ted Cruz has been the star. But to Jasmius's complete shock and dismay, I criticized Cruz as stunned. Well, he's a flat tax advocate, which is better than what we got. But my attitude is, why do you want to change something that we shouldn't have in the first place? How about repealing the 16th Amendment? How about getting rid of a direct tax altogether?
How about getting rid of the
Fed
departments
too.
and the portions that aren't even constitutional? We shouldn't even be paying for.
The problem is spending. And now I put some food in my mouth. I thought you were going to speak longer. Yeah, I've been trying. Well, I was in traffic on the way here, so I had to, grab my food the last second. So the problem is spending, not in income, not revenue.
Well, it always has been. I mean, that's where debt comes from.
The problem is the agenda.
And eventually, when no one wants our debt anymore, that's where debt monetization comes from.
I believe the problem is the agenda, where we're spending money towards agendas of social engineering, creating indolence. If you read Montesquieu, he even talks about this.
Sure.
So.
And of course, you know, we got to get back into the separation of powers like Montesquieu taught, which we aren't. Okay, that said, politicalpistachio.com, DouglasVGibbs.com, conservativecanonade.org for Alex, right?
Right.
And Jasmius?
And blogtalkradio.com/HSR network for Hard Starboard Radio. Once again, weekdays, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And you want to know why? Listen to my podcast from Friday.
United we stand, combined we kick butt. God bless America. God bless you. We'll see you next week.
MobiusScriptPress.com.
You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
From the KCAA Weather Center, I'm Chris Earl Phillips. For this afternoon, mostly sunny, warmer, highs 81 to 86. Tonight, mostly clear, low 46 to 55. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high of 80 to 85. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, low 45 to 54. Heading into the work week, we started on Monday with partly cloudy skies and a high of 75 to 80. Monday night, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming clear, lows 45 to 51. That's your weather forecast for this hour from the station that leaves no listener behind. NBC News Radio, AM 1050, KCAA.
This is Dick from Carpet Masters. Carpet Masters has been serving the Inland Empire for over 55 years. Carpet Masters uses extraction cleaning for your carpet because there's no better cleaning to remove the soil from your carpet. All of our furniture cleaning is done by hand in your home or in our plant. Carpet Masters also offers dry cleaning for fine furniture. Call Carpet Masters at 793-7215. That's 793-7215 for Carpet Masters.
Corporate lobbyists recently admitted to the New York Times, everybody is embarrassed about it, although not so embarrassed that they don't do it. It is the scandalous copulation between corporate cash and willing legislators that's taking place regularly in such secretive rendezvous resorts as the Dorado Beach Ritz-Carlton. Lawmakers and lobbyists don't like to talk about what